Imagine you're sitting at your desk right now. Your boss, or maybe like a major client, asks you a seemingly simple question. Something like, "Hey, what's the exact status of the downtown project?"
Oh, yeah, the classic simple question.
Right. So you nod, you turn to your computer, and you suddenly realize the answer isn't in one place, like at all.
Yeah.
Half the context is buried in some chaotic email thread from last Tuesday. The budget updates are, locked in a spreadsheet that three different people have edited today.
And no one left any notes on what they changed.
Exactly. The final blueprints are in a shared folder. Vendor quotes are sitting in some specialized bidding portal, and your team's internal chatter is just scattered across a project management app.
It is honestly the modern professional's daily nightmare. I mean, we are just drowning in software, yet completely starved for actual context.
Yeah, starved for context. That scenario is basically the jumping-off point for today's deep dive. We're looking at this fascinating stack of architectural blueprints, operational frameworks, and case studies focused on how data-heavy enterprises are desperately trying to survive the AI revolution.
And it really is a desperate situation for a lot of them.
It really is. We're looking closely at the methodology used by implementation partners, specifically Structured Layer. And our main mission today is to unpack something called the three-layer model for enterprise automation. But more importantly, we need to discover why blindly throwing artificial intelligence at your company's messy data is just an absolute recipe for disaster.
Well, if we look at the bigger picture, right, that frantic searching across inboxes and portals that you just described, that's precisely the friction driving companies toward AI in the first place.
Like you just want a magic bullet?
Exactly. Business leaders are overwhelmed, so they look to autonomous agents to just figure it out for them, just fix the mess. But that desperation is leading to what is arguably the most massive failure mode in modern business tech right now.
So let's get into the mechanics of that failure mode, which is often called the hallucination trap.
Yeah.
Because I think it's so important to wrap our heads around this. Think about it this way. Imagine you hire a highly trained librarian.
Okay.
But instead of putting them in a neatly organized library, you drop them into the middle of a hurricane made of loose sticky notes, torn receipts, conflicting memos, just chaos. And while the wind is howling, you ask them to write a comprehensive, accurate summary of your business.
Good luck with that.
Right. But that is essentially what companies do when they point an unsupervised AI at their raw corporate data.
It is. And the technical reality beneath that hurricane metaphor is really fascinating because generic large language models, LLMs, are entirely dependent upon the context they receive. So when you feed them raw, unstructured data, I mean, overlapping email threads, multiple conflicting proposal versions, raw meeting transcripts, they consume a massive amount of unnecessary computational tokens.
Let's actually pause there for a second. We hear the word tokens thrown around a ton in AI, but for anyone who isn't a machine learning engineer, what does that actually mean in a practical sense?
Sure. So think of a token as a piece of a word or a syllable. It's the basic unit of data that an AI processes. And crucially, you pay for compute power by the token.
Ah, so it's directly tied to cost.
Yes. So when an AI is forced to read through, 50 pages of irrelevant email footers and redundant spreadsheet columns just to find one project date, it is burning through thousands of tokens.
Which makes the system incredibly slow.
Slow, high latency, and very expensive. But the most dangerous part isn't actually the cost, it's the hallucination rate.
Really, not the cost.
No, because an AI reading a raw document store to determine a project's status lacks what data scientists call epistemic grounding.
Epistemic grounding. Okay, meaning its knowledge isn't actually anchored to a verified reality.
That is the core issue, yes. The AI isn't reasoning like a human does. It's calculating the statistical probability of the next word. So without a structured foundation of verified facts, without that grounding, it's really merely guessing based on patterns.
I have to push back on this a little, though, because the tech industry has supposedly solved this already, right?
Yep.
Anyone following enterprise AI is hearing nonstop about RAG, retrieval augmented generation.
Oh, RA. Yeah.
The whole pitch of RAG is that you give the AI a search engine, essentially. It searches your company's raw documents,
Yeah.
finds the relevant paragraphs, and uses those to generate a factual answer. So why can't RAG just act as the anchor?
It's a really common assumption, and the macro evidence, especially from the financial and private equity sectors, completely dismantles it.
Really, completely.
Completely. Case studies from firms operating in highly regulated spaces like V7 Labs and DeSeti, they reveal the fatal flaw of relying on RAG in unstructured environments.
Okay, walk me through that.
Well, imagine using ORAG to point an AI at a massive directory of unstructured due diligence files, or like a 2,000-page compliance manual. The search algorithm is looking for keywords, right? But because the files aren't structured or properly version controlled, the AI inevitably retrieves an incomplete or completely outdated slice of context.
Wait, so the AI does its job perfectly. It summarizes the document it found. The problem is that the search engine just handed it version 1 of the contract instead of version 4.
Exactly. And because these language models are designed to be highly articulate, the AI will deliver that outdated information in a way that sounds incredibly fluent.
And super confident.
Highly confident. It's a factually disastrous output delivered with total authority. The research from V7 Labs concludes that you just cannot search raw text to fix this.
Oh.
You have to build a structured business memory layer first, like a unified knowledge graph that normalizes the data, because automation built without structural integrity fundamentally fails.
Wow. Okay, so if tossing an AI at raw data, even with a fancy search engine, is the problem, how do we actually fix the foundation?
That is where the three-layer model comes in.
Right. Because AI fails on raw data, we have to look beneath the AI to the foundational plumbing that supports it. So let's break down layer one, the data layer, which is all about achieving reliable context. Right?
Right. And this base layer requires a massive paradigm shift in how an organization even thinks about its files. Because in unstructured environments, people mistakenly treat a file name as a dependable record.
Oh, man, we all have that file on our desktop right now. Like yeah. U3 estimate final V2.pdf.
Yes.
Okay.
But a file name like that is just an artifact. It has no structural business context. It has no relational integrity to the rest of the company. So the data layer systematically transforms those disconnected artifacts into verified multidimensional records.
Mechanically, though, how does that happen? Does someone have to go in and manually retype everything into a new database? Please tell me no.
No. This is where data ingestion engines come in. When a file enters the system, the underlying architecture strips out the metadata, reads the contents, and assigns immutable relational tags in a central database. It creates, essentially, a structured shadow profile of that file. So that PDF estimate you mentioned, it isn't just sitting in a folder anymore. The system links it directly to the official project phase, the specific professional discipline it belongs to, its exact revision history, any related technical queries, you name it.
It weaves the isolated file into a connected data graph.
Exactly.
Now, if you are listening to this and worrying that achieving this level of structure means your company has to rip out all of its expensive software, there is some very good news in the sources. A major theme in these operational frameworks is that we are not talking about application replacement.
No, absolutely not.
You do not throw away highly specialized authoritative tools like Procore or Autodesk Construction Cloud or Sage. Those tools are entrenched because they are highly effective at their specific jobs.
Right. For two decades, digital transformation usually meant buying one massive monolithic platform and forcing every single department to use it.
Which is usually a disaster.
A total disaster. The three-layer model takes a different approach, context integration. You leave the specialist software in place and you engineer the connective data tissue beneath them. So employees keep using the interfaces they know, but the underlying data flows seamlessly between them.
Which eliminates the shadow IT of people manually updating spreadsheets to reconcile different systems.
Exactly.
Okay, so if we've solved the data structure in layer one, the next challenge is actually moving it through the company. That brings us to layer two, the workflow layer. Because once you have structured, reliable data, you need to govern its movement.
Yes, this layer is all about ownership and accountability.
It eliminates the ambiguity of the manual handoff. You know, that off moment where you email a file to a colleague and just cross your fingers that they deal with it.
Right.
The workflow layer handles intake validation, routing, and exception management.
To really understand how this plumbing works, let's look at a specific mechanic detailed in the architecture. The RFQ to bid workflow.
Okay, let's do it.
This is how a company transitions from scattered client inputs to a reliable commercial outcome. Let's say a request for a quote, an RFQ, comes in via email or a web portal. First, the workflow captures the opportunity and runs an autonomous duplicate check against the entire structured data graph to ensure another department isn't already working on it.
Which is a huge issue in siloed companies. Two teams bidding on the exact same project without knowing it.
Oh, it happens constantly. But once it clears that duplicate check, the workflow relates that request to known entities and geographic sites in your system. From there, it routes the opportunity to a specific estimator based on predefined rules.
Like their trade specialty or their current workload capacity.
Exactly, or their geographic location.
What stands out to me here is how a structured workflow handles exceptions. Because let's say the system captures two conflicting due dates from different client documents for the same bid.
A very common problem.
Right. And in an unstructured manual system, that discrepancy might just sit unnoticed in an inbox until the deadline blows past. But here, the workflow automatically pauses. It flags the conflicting dates and pushes the exception directly to a human reviewer. It actively prevents critical processes from silently stalling.
And that active monitoring is the difference between a governed process and a chaotic one. And critically, it's only possible because the foundational data layer beneath it is so rigidly structured. The system actually knows what a due date is, so it knows when two of them don't match.
Makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we've structured our data in layer one, and we've governed how it moves in layer two. Now we finally reach the apex of the hierarchy. Layer three, the automation and AI layer. Because we've done the hard work below, this is where AI can actually be deployed safely.
And safely is the operative word here. Because the system is structured, the AI is supplied with only the specific, relevant context that is permitted by a user's organizational role.
Right.
The technical term for this is bounded execution.
Meaning, the AI isn't reading the entire company's history every time you ask it a question about a specific project.
Exactly. It minimizes the context window. And when you reduce the amount of data the AI has to process to only what is strictly relevant, you drastically reduce that computational token consumption we talked about earlier.
Which drops operational costs.
Drops costs, accelerates response times. It's cheaper, faster, and infinitely more accurate because the AI has no choice but to rely on the structurally sound data you've fed it.
And as an employee using this system, it provides an incredible level of confidence. Because the AI is drawing from structured records, any generated summary or drafted correspondence explicitly cites the records it used.
Yes.
If the AI drafts an email for you regarding a budget change, it tells you exactly which immutable data points it based that draft on. You can seamlessly verify the evidence before you hit send.
And that verification step brings us to perhaps the most critical rule of this entire architectural paradigm, the strict separation of preparation and authority.
The legal firewall.
Yeah.
This is such an important concept to grasp.
It really is. In a properly governed system, AI is permitted to do the heavy lifting of preparation. It can summarize complex requests, suggest record matches, draft client correspondence, or computationally assemble an issue pack.
All the tedious stuff.
Right. But it is structurally barred from executing high-impact actions. It cannot independently approve design instructions. It cannot commit the company to a contract. It cannot authorize safety-critical field work.
But why is this structural separation so vital? Like, to play devil's advocate, why not let the AI just hit the approve button if it has all the right data?
It comes down to catastrophic liability. In industries with high capital expenditures, operational errors have massive, massive consequences. Imagine if an AI hallucinates the expiration date of a specialty subcontractor's liability insurance and autonomously clears them to work on a high-rise project without valid coverage.
Oh, yeah.
Or imagine an AI independently approving a structural engineering change that it just misunderstood.
Mm.
You are looking at devastating financial litigation, or worse, severe physical safety failures.
The blast radius of an AI mistake in the physical world is just too large.
Exactly. Which is why human-in-the-loop authority isn't just some temporary technological limitation that we're waiting for better models to solve. It is a permanent legal, commercial, and organizational necessity. The system must force a named, accountable human professional to explicitly authorize the final action.
That is how you neutralize the commercial risks of language model hallucinations.
Bingo.
Okay, so we know what to build the three-layer model, and we know why human in the loop is legally required. But anyone who has lived through a corporate software rollout is probably breaking out in hives right now.
Oh, for sure.
How do you actually implement this without falling into a black hole of endless consulting fees or getting locked into a massive multi-year SaaS platform subscription?
Well, the transition from chaos to structure is definitely where most companies fail. But the operational frameworks outline a very rigid, highly pragmatic four-phase execution playbook used by implementation partners.
Yeah.
The whole philosophy here is bounded risk. The phases are diagnose, map, build, and operate.
Let's explore that first step, the diagnose phase. This is basically a gap assessment, but there is a very strict rule right out of the gate regarding live data.
Yes. During the diagnostic phase, organizations must identify specific operational friction points, like, say, a high rate of misbids or a total disconnect in management reporting. But critically, submitting live API keys, network credentials, or highly sensitive production data is strictly forbidden at this stage.
Wait, really? How do you diagnose a company's data problem without actually looking at their live data?
You look at the metadata and the process maps. You look at how the teams describe their bottlenecks and the types of software they use. You don't need to read the actual confidential contents of a contract to map the fact that it takes 14 days and 6 emails to get a contract approved.
Ah, I see.
So this keeps the early stages incredibly low risk from a security standpoint. It's purely an assessment of tool sets, ownership gaps, and transaction volumes to see if a workflow intervention is even viable.
And assuming the intervention is viable, you move to phase two, map. This is where a company develops an operating layer blueprint. The fascinating thing about this step is the structural decoupling of design from implementation.
Yes.
It involves structured stakeholder interviews, current state workflow maps, and relational data models. But it involves absolutely zero production coding. And the numbers here are so specific. This phase costs a fixed $3,500, takes about 10 business days, involves up to 3 stakeholder interviews, and again, zero coding.
That decoupling protects the enterprise from open-ended consulting bills. You get a fully transparent, validated blueprint and a fixed commercial quote for the actual build before a single dollar of production capital is risked. It forces the architects to prove the logic on paper before writing a line of code.
I love that. So if the blueprint makes sense, you move to phase three, build. This is where the actual plumbing gets connected, typically running, what, $9,500 to $17,500, taking 4 to 8 weeks.
Around that, yeah.
But a major sticking point for a lot of legacy businesses is that their data doesn't live in modern cloud apps. How does this architecture handle a company running on old servers?
A robust implementation meets the company where its data actually lives. If you have modern tech, they use webhooks and APIs.
Just for clarity, a webhook is basically a real-time data tap. Like when something happens in one app, it instantly pings the structured layer.
Yes, it's real-time event notification. But if a company is stuck on legacy systems that don't support webhooks, the architecture is built around scheduled exports, secure inbox rules, and direct database connections. You can pull data out of a 20-year-old on-premise system as long as you can schedule a daily export.
Okay, so there's always a way in. Finally, we reach phase four, operate. And this isn't just turning the server on and walking away. It involves a stabilization period with rigorous systemic testing. Hmm. And what really caught my eye here is the heavy focus on negative test cases.
Oh, absolutely. Testing what the system should do is easy. Testing what it shouldn't be able to do is where real security lies. During this phase, you actively try to trigger unauthorized access protocols. You test how the system handles missing data, and you stress test those duplicate resolution mechanics we talked about to ensure the exception routing pauses the system instead of breaking it.
And at the end of that testing phase comes the most important commercial aspect of this entire approach. At final handover, the enterprise assumes absolute ownership of the intellectual property, the operational data, and the underlying system. You own your operational brain.
Which is huge.
You completely avoid the traditional vendor lock-in where you are essentially just renting access to your own data infrastructure year after year.
It's a fundamental shift in how we commercialize enterprise tech. You are engineering a bespoke asset for your company rather than forcing your operations into a generic rented box.
Now, once the system is built and you own this structured layer, it fundamentally changes the culture and the economics of the organization itself. One of the most fascinating cultural shifts highlighted in the case studies is the obsolescence of human information silos.
Yeah, and this is where the human element of digital transformation gets incredibly complicated. Every company has that one person, let's call them the seasoned estimator or the veteran project manager.
Oh, we all know someone like this. They're the human bottleneck who knows how everything actually works.
Their proprietary knowledge, their historical pricing intuition, their complex client relationship context, it all lives entirely in their head. Or, you know, perhaps in a highly customized private spreadsheet saved to their local desktop.
Right.
Historically, they derive their job security and internal influence from being that single point of failure. If you needed an answer, you had to ask them.
But the structured layer forcibly transfers that knowledge out of individual human memory and directly into the corporate data graph.
Yeah.
Every decision, every procedural exception, every piece of rationale is captured in real time as they use the system.
And this democratizing of information is fantastic for the enterprise. It drastically accelerates new employee onboarding, and it creates the clean data required for advanced AI reasoning. But there is a big but. It will inevitably cause cultural resistance. Legacy personnel will feel their highly specialized knowledge is being commoditized. Management has to be prepared to navigate that shift in organizational power dynamics because it is going to be uncomfortable.
Definitely. But if leadership can navigate that cultural friction, the ultimate economic payoff is staggering. It leads to the creation of what the operational frameworks call the high-velocity operational pod.
Yes. This is the macroeconomic endgame of the three-layer model. Research shows that in traditional engineering or operational teams that exceed 15 people, they suffer from a massive coordination tax.
A massive.
Up to 40% of available operational hours are burned just managing cross-functional dependencies.
Wow, so that 40% is the daily stand-up meetings, the constant Slack messaging, trying to find a file, the context switching between different tasks.
It is the friction of manual human handoffs. And that tax gets worse with every person you add to the team. But, and this is the exciting part with a governed structured layer, you don't need a massive team manually handing off files and summarizing data for each other.
Because the system handles it.
Exactly. You deploy bounded AI agents in layer 3 to handle the data extraction, the tracking, and the drafting. So suddenly, a high velocity pod of just 3 to 6 people can execute the exact same workload as that traditional 20-person team.
Because the AI does the assembling, and the humans just do the deciding. Parallel AI execution, strictly gated by human review points, eliminates the sequential bottlenecks that used to throttle the business.
The structured layer is the mandatory digital infrastructure required to unlock that kind of hyperproductivity. You cannot buy your way into a high-velocity pod with just a software subscription. You have to architect it.
That is incredible. Let's take a breath and synthesize the journey we've just been on. We started by learning why pointing unsupervised AI at unstructured data triggers the hallucination trap. We broke down how the three-layer model fixes it by building governed connective tissue underneath your existing apps. We explored the vital, non-negotiable legal firewall between AI preparation and human decision authority, and we walked through the bounded 4-step path to implementing this without risking your entire IT budget, culminating in those incredibly efficient high-velocity pods.
It really is a comprehensive blueprint for surviving in the next era of enterprise technology. But before we wrap up, there is one final, rather provocative thought from the macroeconomic data that we need to leave you to mull over.
I love a good lingering question. What's the final takeaway?
So throughout our discussion, we have viewed data readiness as an internal tool, right? Something you build to make your own company faster and safer.
Right.
But a macroeconomic shift is happening right now with platforms like Tender AI in the UK mortgage space, or Aecon in B2B wholesale markets. These electronic markets and AI assistants are increasingly refusing to interact with companies that lack machine-readable, structured data.
Wait, refusing to interact, meaning they block them?
If a financial firm doesn't have verified structure, like specific markup on their domains linked to authoritative national registries, they are entirely invisible to AI recommendation engines.
Oh.
Wholesale platforms are beginning to mandate structured vetting before they even allow a transaction to occur on their networks. So the question we have to ask ourselves is this: are we rapidly approaching a future where data readiness isn't just an internal operational advantage, but a strict requirement for corporate existence? If an AI cannot read and verify your company's structure, will your company even be visible to the future economy?
If you aren't structured, you just cease to exist in the eyes of the digital market.
Basically.
That is a chilling but incredibly motivating thought to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. I highly encourage you, the next time you sit at your desk and look at that chaotic inbox or that folder full of conflicting spreadsheets, don't just see a mess, see a foundation that is waiting to be structured. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.